Hey Morbidology listeners, you know I love a good story, and this one is truly unmissable. It's set in West Virginia in the 70s and 80s, and follows the disappearance of a true radical hippie, Marcia Mudd Ferber. She was a bar owner, drug dealer, leader in the community, and a mother of two. And one day, she just vanished, without a trace. The case has been open for nearly 35 years. And on the new podcast, I Was Never There, the investigation truly begins. Hosted by Marcia's close friends, the show is beautifully reported and takes you on a journey far beyond Marcia into the unique time and place of counterculture West Virginia. There's marijuana, free love, family drama, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You'll be obsessed. Check out I Was Never There wherever you get your podcasts.
MCSO has obtained the last known photo of Trisha captured at the Hope Sound Publix Tuesday evening. As you can see, and I think we've got pictures out there for you, she is smiling and appears to be in good spirits.
Hope Sound is an ex-urban area located near West Palm Beach in Florida. People are drawn to the area by its pristine beaches and unspoiled parks. In 2016, however, residents of the quaint area would come together to search for a missing woman. This woman had kept a detailed journal, and this journal would bring to the forefront of the investigation some very suspicious characters, including a violence-prone ex-husband, a potential new boyfriend, and an obsessive ventriloquist. Hope Sound is centrally located between Jupiter and Stuart, along the picturesque Atlantic coast of Florida. There are miles upon miles of unspoiled beaches, making it the perfect location for those who want a little bit of tranquility. One of the people who called Hope Sound home was 30-year-old Trisha Todd, an Air Force veteran who was working as a hospice nurse. Trisha had grown up in the area, having been homeschooled by her parents. Sundays were spent at Sunday school, where Trisha made lifelong friends, in particular, Jen Byler. Jen would describe Trisha as the outdoorsy type. In her own words, she said that she was as rough as nails. She was the third of eight children, and was the only girl among the siblings. After being homeschooled for a while, Trisha attended Hope Sound Christian Academy, where she was known to be a friendly student and a hard worker. From here, she went to South Fork High School, where she graduated in 2004. Becky Vahan, secretary at the school, remembered her as being very upbeat and involved in life. It was at school that Trisha met Stephen Williams, and they became high school sweethearts, getting married just after graduation. Much like Trisha, he too had come from a deeply religious family. He was raised by a single mother, went to a private Christian school, and was a regular at church. Before Trisha embarked on her career as a hospice nurse, she had worked as a pediatric nurse and then served some time in the Air Force. During her time in the Air Force, she was deployed to Southwest Asia in the Persian Gulf region as a member of the 229th Air Expeditionary Wing. She was then assigned for 2 years to a squadron at Shaw Air Force Base located in Sumter, South Carolina. Stephen was also in the Air Force. In 2014, Trisha gave birth to a little baby girl. They named her Faith in homage to their religious beliefs. Trisha had actually tried for years to get pregnant, and she had learned that she was pregnant while on a mission trip Tahiti with a local church. Tricia absolutely loved being a mother. Her brother Joshua said that she was the best mother any child could ever wish for. He stated, "She was a real loving person. She didn't judge people. She just believed in love and not judging people. When Tricia wasn't spending time with her daughter, she was putting her heart and soul into her job as a hospice nurse. She would always make time to pray with her hospice patients and their families, providing them with positivity even in their darkest moments. Tricia's patients always loved when she would sing hymn to them. Because of her faith, those who knew Tricia said that she never feared death. In fact, her co-worker at Treasure Coast Hospice, Brandy Wethingston, said, she saw it as a way of being closer with God. Tricia liked to keep an online journal that provided quite a grim insight into what appeared to be a happy marriage on the outside. Her journal was titled Beauty for Ashes, and in it, Tricia posted about her life, faith, and her tumultuous relationship with Stephen. She made it abundantly clear that she had immense love and respect for Stephen, but cracks had begun to emerge, and Stephen was showing a dark side. In August of 2009, she wrote that Stephen accidentally broke the neck of one of her kittens, writing, "It takes a truly evil person to kill such a sweet kitten. That's when I finally saw him for what he was and left him. I have forgiven my soon-to-be ex-husband for many things, but have been holding out on these things." However, the breakup wasn't to last, and within 2 months, Tricia would take Stephen back. As she wrote, it was thanks to God. She wrote that Stephen had turned his life over to Christ. Tricia wrote about how God had taught her to be a good wife and let her husband take the lead in their marriage. The journal offered a disturbing insight into a pattern of violence. And in March of 2015, Tricia and Stephen were divorced. Stephen was ordered by the court to pay $1,150 a month in child support. According to friends and family, the divorce was an amicable one, and Stephen would see Faith on most weekends. In the wake of the divorce, Tricia and Faith moved into a quiet neighbourhood in Hope Sound. It was the perfect place for Tricia to raise her little girl. The mother and daughter duo were often spotted outside by their neighbours, playing with chalk or playing crisscross. On Wednesday, the 27th of April 2016, police in Hope Sound received a phone call from Tricia's family to report her missing. That morning, Tricia had been scheduled to pick up Faith from Stephen. However, she never showed up. At the time, Stephen had been living in Raleigh, North Carolina, as he was stationed at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, but he had driven to Florida to visit Faith. He was renting a house in Hope Sound via Airbnb, and Tricia had dropped Faith off to stay overnight, arranging to pick her up the next morning. When the morning rolled around, however, Tricia never appeared. Stephen would speak with police and said that during the night, Faith had asked to see her mother because she was feeling sick. He had sent Tricia a text message asking her to come over and see Faith, to which she did. Stephen said that Tricia then left the rented house at around 2 a.m, but then she never showed up again the following morning. Stephen took Faith to Walmart in the morning and then to Bush Wildlife Sanctuary in Jupiter. He texted Tricia, asking her where she was. He needed to drop Faith off with her because he needed to return to the Army base in North Carolina. After all of his text messages and phone calls were ignored, Stephen dropped Faith off with a babysitter. As the hours passed and Tricia was nowhere to be seen, concern escalated. The babysitter made contact with Tricia's family to let them know that she couldn't get in contact with Tricia, and she never came to pick up Faith. When police chatted with Stephen, he said that it was normal for Tricia to just vanish without saying anything to anybody. He said that she would leave in the middle of the night, sometimes for 12 to 24 hours at a time, and it was one of the reasons that they split up. Shortly after Tricia was reported missing, her neighbour, Melissa Crable, would find her car. It was parked just outside her house. The car keys were found inside the ignition, and her purse was found inside the car. Police would attempt to retrace Trish's last known movements, to try and narrow down exactly when she went missing. They would scour through security footage from all local businesses and ask the public if they had security cameras or even dash cameras to check through their footage to see if they could spot Tricia. Police would find some footage from the public supermarket on Federal Highway near Bridge Road from the 26th of April, the night before Tricia was scheduled to pick up Faith. Tricia could be seen in the footage. She was wearing a black dress and a pair of flat ballet pumps. She smiled at the cashier as she paid for her groceries and then she left. Police would speak with management at Publix, and the cashier who served Tricia remembered her being there and said that there was nothing unusual about her. She appeared to be in good spirits. A press conference was held by the sheriff to update the public on the search for Tricia.
Thank you all so much. I know it's hot out here. We're in day five of this search for Tricia Todd. The Martin County Sheriff's Office detectives, deputies, and representatives from the State Attorney's Office wrapped up a status briefing on the disappearance of Tricia Todd just a short time ago. MCSO has obtained the last known photo of Tricia captured at the Hope Sound Publix Tuesday evening. As you can see, and I think we've got pictures out there for you, she is smiling and appears to be in good spirits. There are a number of investigators working on different aspects of Tricia's disappearance. At this time, everyone involved in this case has been cooperative, including her former husband. Tips have been coming in, including walk-in and telephone tips. We have received those tips from as far away as California. We have received as many as 15 to 20 tips. Some are possible sightings of Tricia.
On the second day of the search, police would deploy air units to assist in the search. There were now between 40 and 50 police officers actively searching for Tricia, as well as sniffer dogs and a sheriff's helicopter. The main focus of the area was the wooded areas and state park surrounding Tricia's home. They also turned their attention to the shoreline. Apparently, Tricia liked to go to the beach to pray or read her Bible. Police were also making contact with all of Tricia's loved ones to try and build a picture of her and her character, with Martin County Sheriff William Snyder announcing, "We are microscopically going through Tricia Todd's life. We're trying to look at every single sentence she's ever written on the internet. We're trying to look at everything she's ever done on Facebook." They turned to Tricia's online journal. As mentioned, she detailed her marital issues with Stephen, but she also spoke recently of a man that she had a crush on, who she had dreamed of being with. There were some sinister undertones in her writing, however. One journal entry read, "This painful love affair, it's a Pisces and Scorpio thing. Are you happy? I've never had a deep blue love affair with a true Scorpio that didn't feel this way." Based on the writings, Tricia was obsessed with this man. Police were able to identify him and they followed him around for a while, half expecting to see Tricia with him. But Tricia was nowhere to be seen and the man told police that he had no clue where she was. Police would then learn of a ventriloquist who performed at Tricia's church, who, at least according to her friends and family, was obsessed with Tricia. Police made contact with the man and he provided a polarizing interpretation of their relationship, instead suggesting that it was Tricia who had a crush on him. He said that because of this, he had been avoiding Tricia and he had no clue where she was. Police were working on three theories. Either Tricia left on her own accord and did not want to be found, she was injured somewhere, or foul play was involved and she was potentially abducted. As the hours turned into days and no new developments were uncovered, police would ramp up their search, calling on police officers from Fort Pierce and Vero Beach to come and assist. The search fanned out to other areas in Hope Sound, places that Tricia was known to frequent. Like Stephen had mentioned, Tricia liked to go off on her own. She was known to disappear on walks, either to take in the scenery or pray. Despite this, her family said that she would never have disappeared for this long and would never leave her daughter behind when she had made arrangements to pick her up. On Saturday morning, Tricia was scheduled to return to work, but she was a no-show, further compounding the fear that something sinister had happened to her. Despite the fears, Trisha's family were still clinging on to hope that she was alive and well, with her brother Nathan stating, "We're just continuing to ask for prayers. We're continuing to pray. I just think that is the most powerful thing we can do." Police announced to the public that they didn't consider Stephen a suspect in his ex-wife's disappearance. They had checked surveillance footage from all the spots Stephen claimed he went to with his daughter that morning, and it all checked out. Trisha's family also stood by Stephen, referring to him as the perfect gentleman who had shown concern for his ex-wife. However, as the weekend came and went with no new developments, police then announced they were travelling to North Carolina to chat with Stephen further, just to see if he could provide any further insight. As the search entered its second week with no tips or leads, police announced that they were going to suspend their search, at least until there were new developments. The lead investigator, Detective Michael Dougherty, said that they had exhausted all efforts, yet they were no closer to uncovering what had happened to Trisha than they were on day one. He said that they had found no evidence of an abduction or of foul play, but they still hadn't ruled out criminal activity. He announced that the investigation was remaining active as a missing person case unless they found a body or evidence to indicate that Trisha was dead. He stated, "If we get new information, we will follow up on it." The decision was crushing to Trisha's family, who feared the worst. They said that it wasn't in Trisha's character to just up and leave, especially leaving her daughter behind. What was also extremely suspicious was the fact that Trisha's cell phone and her credit cards hadn't shown any signs of activity since her disappearance. Her mother, Rebecca Hasselbach, appealed to the public and asked them to continue to search for Trisha. She stated, "It's been a really difficult time for our family with Trisha missing, but I'm asking everyone to continue to search. Someone out there knows something or has seen something." Today's episode is sponsored by the amazing Ana Luisa, A-N-A-L-U-I-S-A, which is a jewellery brand with a simple but clear-cut idea that high-quality jewellery shouldn't cost the planet. They offer the most beautiful and unique pieces, from earrings and rings to necklaces and bracelets and everything in between. With my mother's birthday coming up at the end of the month, I knew instantly of the perfect gift, Ana Luisa. I ordered her the Orienne Mother of Pearl earrings and the Lore Mother of Pearl necklace to match. The pieces are not only gorgeous, but they're timeless as well, and the perfect gift for anybody in your life. I also treated myself to some pieces too. The quality of Ana Luisa is top-notch, but it's completely affordable as well. Their prices are more than fair, with some pieces starting at $39, and new jewelry collections are released each Friday. Just go to shop.analuisa.com/morbidology, that is shop.analuisa.com/morbidology, to get new jewelry pieces with Ana Luisa's buy one, get one 40% off sale. Did you know that stress shows up in all kinds of ways? For example, headaches, teeth grinding, digestive issues, sleep problems, and even doom scrolling. Well, BetterHelp is here for you and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. I know for me personally, sometimes it's better to chat with somebody about my problems such as sleeping issues that leave me feeling tired, stressed out, and unable to focus. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anybody if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Morbidology listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/morbidology. That is BetterHelp.com/morbidology. A Facebook page had also been set up by Trisha's friends, and they were utilizing it to continue the search. Then on the 24th of May, there was a massive breakthrough in the case when it was announced that somebody had been arrested in connection with Trisha's murder. It was none other than her ex-husband, Stephen Williams. During a press conference, Sheriff Snyder announced that Stephen had confessed to killing Tricia. While the public hadn't been made aware, police were suspicious of Stephen from the very beginning. His own mother, Chaney Smith, had spoken with them, and she revealed some very ominous information. She said that her son absolutely hated his ex-wife, and had even commented that he could make her disappear. She even revealed her personal belief that her son had killed his ex-wife, and his trip to Faith was a ruse to get close to Tricia. Chaney actually questioned her son over the phone, and he denied any involvement. During their marriage, Stephen had bouts of violence and infidelity. Then on top of that, there were money issues. Stephen had been angry about the amount he needed to pay for child support each month. He was interviewed a total of 3 times as police searched for Tricia. One interview was conducted using a polygraph examination, which Stephen had willingly submitted to. It was immediately noticed during these interviews that Stephen kept providing inconsistencies. Suspicions were further cemented when a neighbour told police they'd seen Stephen driving Trish's car after he claimed that he last saw her. He was also captured on surveillance footage driving the car. When presented with this information, Stephen claimed that he had taken Trish's car, but only to fill up the gas tank and then return it. By this point in the investigation, police had uncovered some more surveillance footage, which called to question Stephen's version of events. Surveillance footage had captured Stephen going from Trish's home to the home that he was renting on the morning that she was reported missing. But it was from between 4:30 a.m. and 5:30 a.m. Stephen never mentioned this to police. What was he doing going between the houses at such an early time in the morning? At first, Stephen claimed that it couldn't have been him on the surveillance footage, that he was asleep at the time. He was pushed further for information.
So what I want to do is try to set the stage so that you can actually tell the narrative about what actually happened, which is not that you planned all this, okay? Not that you planned down here to come down here and kill her and send her out into the woods like some sort of mass murderer. I mean, really? I mean, like you're going to chop her up into little bits or something like that? I mean, that seems kind of ridiculous, okay? It seems far-fetched, like you said, okay? And I don't think you planned all this. I don't think you're capable of that, okay? I think what happens is sometimes things just get out of hand, okay? You agree with that? Sometimes, you know, people start doing something and they cause something to happen, okay? And I'm not saying you wanted this to happen, all right? But I know you were there when it happened. And then we also have things that are not consistent, okay? We're having inconsistencies where there's still holes. Even after all of this, there's still holes in the story that we can prove through evidence that what you're telling us is not completely true. And that continues to make it look like even having understanding that this has happened and it was out of your control and we know what happened, you're still trying to tell us little lies about what happened so that it makes you look better. And unfortunately, that's not going to help you because any lie at this point is going to make you look bad. And it's going to tip that boulder right back to everybody thinking, oh, well, he's a liar.
Stephen continued to deny any involvement.
But I didn't do anything to her.
And you're not hearing me. Okay, you're not hearing me. Okay, I'm not saying that you did anything to her on purpose. I'm not saying that you hurt her. I'm not saying that you laid hands on her. Okay. But I do know that you know what happened to her.
That's any better.
That's no better. No, tell
me. The same scenario.
That is miles better than I came down here with a backpack full of tools, ready to kill her and drag her out with her lifeless body into the woods.
It was just clothes. It was just the clothes that didn't
fit. You heard the narrative that you told. You told us. I had a bag. I had clothes.
Yeah.
I had water.
Yeah,
I had
not
snacks.
Already in there. What? No.
I'm saying, you got the bag, and then after all this is done, all this messy business is finished. Now you get rid of that. That looks awful.
I know.
That looks like a murder bag. Oh my gosh, he came down here with this bag. And I don't think it was. I think it was just a bag with some stuff in it.
Yes.
But you
literally
need,
what it was. Just
but you need to
extra
explain
stuff that I already had.
But if that's the case, you need to explain how she got hurt.
Stephen finally broke down with somewhat of a confession. He claimed that he had gone out that morning in Trisha's car to get her gas. He made the claim that when he returned from getting gas, he found her face down with a cut on her forehead. He said that her breathing was shallow and that she eventually stopped breathing. He claimed he placed Trisha in her own car and disposed of her body along a dirt road, but said he couldn't remember where the road was exactly. He was pressed for more information with a police officer, pointing out that it was a remarkable moment in his life, something he would not simply forget. This claim was quite ludicrous, and police pointed that out to Stephen. He was asked why he disposed of Trisha's body if he hadn't killed her. He claimed that he had freaked out because Trisha was always messing with him and always trying to ruin his life. He said to police, "I didn't even touch her initially. All I thought was this was some kind of trick. This was some kind of ploy to get back at me or to mess things up for me."
And because sit here and tell you that she attacked me, that's just another different story that you're just going to be like, well, that's five different stories he's telling now. And that doesn't help either. So what do you want me to tell you? What do you want me to tell you, Dave?
I want you to tell me the
because
truth.
I'm telling you, I didn't hurt this woman.
Okay.
I never did anything to injure her or hurt her. My only mistake is I didn't just accept that this is the situation and call 911. That's what I should have done.
Did she attack you?
I didn't take her to the hospital. I should have just did that. Instead, I just panicked and I just tried to get away from it all. I just wanted nothing to do with all that.
But you panicked.
Not me. I just panicked.
You panicked because of what happened, because you thought it would come back on you.
Because it did. It does. Like, in the past, even. I didn't do anything to her, but
here's the thing. People fall down all the time. People get hurt, okay? It's not uncommon, okay? And we can find that out. That's not something that's difficult to determine, okay? There's people that go to a lot of school and they get paid a lot of money to figure out exactly what happened to somebody, okay? And I know you don't believe that, and I know you were panicking. I get that. But I know that what you're telling us about coming back from the gas station, I know that's a lie. I know that's a lie.
Police would get a search warrant for Stephen's computers, and they would find some very ominous search terms. In late March, he had purchased two battery-powered saws from Amazon. They also uncovered that he had researched acid. After police pointed out the inconsistencies and the mounting evidence against him, Stephen would make another confession. He would claim that he had been arguing with Trisha over finances.
I don't even know it just happened.
Talk to me about from midnight. He texted her. Face was upset.
I would have never texted her otherwise. It was already late and she had already left. I would have never texted her.
And you're a good dad. So you wanted her. You wanted to give Faith what she wanted.
That's it. That's all I was trying to do, was just be a good dad. Just, okay, you want your mom? Fine. Like, I'm not going to deny you that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Faith wants you, you know, just come by. That's fine. And then, no, I never liked her around. I never liked being in a one-on-one situation with her because I could never predict her. I don't know the version of her I'm getting at that moment. And so, no, I never liked being in a one-on-one situation. Just because,
right.
Just like now, there's only my order or work or whatever. I can't change how things freaking look.
Right.
So, yeah, she came over and she was with Faith. And then she just started talking about nonsense and bringing up child support and just more stupid stuff that I just, for the most part, tried to ignore. And then, yeah, there was a mix-up with the check, but that's not my fault because you told me this was your address, so yeah, that's where I mailed it to. And then she's telling me that's not the mailing address. It's just what I'm like, that's not my fault. If you told me you moved, I did the responsible thing, and I made sure the check was going to go wherever you moved to if you're not at your mom's house. And then she's just going on and on about now I owe her more money and back child support. And I'm just sitting here like, then I'll fix it. I'll send you another. I'll do something, but I don't have the money now, so just give me some time, like, because that money, since you didn't get it on time, is already spent. I spent it to come here, and now I need a little more time to get it to you. And now she's talking about how she's going to go to court and all this other stuff, and it's my fault. And I'm just like, this isn't even my fault. Like, you told me you moved, so I adjusted it. Like, just calm down. Like, this isn't even that serious. This is an easily rectifiable, why are you getting all out of hand about this, you know?
Right.
And I know I didn't go through the court to pay child support, but every time I tried, it was just, she just stonewalled me. Like, I don't want to do that because I haven't paid money to send you money, which is stupid. I was like, just let me have your account information, just the account number, and I'll direct deposit it, and this will never happen. And no, that's not going to work, and we can't do that. You owe me all this money.
He said that she was yelling in his face about stupid things like child support when he pushed her.
On and on and on, to the point where now I'm just trying to like walk away. Now I can't walk away because you're circling me and you're jumping in front of my face, and it just got so aggressive, and I'm just trying to back away and de-escalate, and I can't even leave the house now. You know, I don't want to push you, I don't want to touch you, I don't want anything with you, because all I'm just thinking about flashbacks of before, when you just blew all this shit up for no reason, and then now I'm getting arrested, but only after the fact did you go and, you know, say that it wasn't my fault. No, no one else knows that now, but only after the fact that I got arrested. All I'm thinking, just flashbacks. I go to push her away, and then she gets really pissed about that, and then she gets even more aggressive and in my face and pushing me back, and I'm like, would you please just stop? Like, I don't want this. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why you're so mad. I don't know if you took a freaking crazy pill all the way over here, and that really pissed her off, and it just escalated, and then I just moved her away, and then she slipped. And that's when she freaking fell. And I'm like, oh shit. I asked her if she was okay. It was like a weird sound. She didn't say anything though. And then I freaking panicked. And then I just freaking panicked. Because I didn't try to hurt you. I just wanted you to stop being here in my face yelling at me as I'm trying to back away. I'm trying to de-escalate. I don't want, whatever this is, it's not that serious. I don't know why it's so serious about this money. It's always been so like, even throughout the divorce, every penny has just been so serious about her trying to get every dollar.
Right.
And I'm like, and now I made a mistake and I sent the check to the wrong address because I didn't know that wasn't a mailing address. And I can't explain where it is because I didn't even get it back in the mail until a week after that. And it just went so fast. And then I pushed her and I didn't push. I was just trying to get her away. Just please stop yelling in my face. It's like, just, you know, like if she was at that distance, fine, but she wasn't. She's just
right
here the whole time, and I'm like, please, just stop. And so I went to move her away, and she slipped, and she hit her head, and I didn't mean for that. That wasn't my freaking fault. I wasn't. And then all I'm thinking is, great, now I've pushed her, and she's hurt her head, and I'm done. I'm just, everything I've tried to do, everything I've tried to be is done, because I made a mistake. I didn't even lose my cool. I just tried to move you away. I just did.
He claimed she fell and hit her head on something, and that afterwards, her breathing began to slow before eventually she died. He chillingly revealed that when Trisha was killed, Faith was there. Stephen then claimed that he put her body in the back of her own car, and then drove west on Bridge Road past Federal Highway.
And I know you don't want to, but we need to know where Trisha is.
I don't know, and I really don't have a freaking clue where that was. I just panicked, and I just drove.
And I know you were...
Through a million and one scenarios in my head of what to do, and none of them were good. All of them just ended bad.
He said that he left her body along a dirt road with her iPhone and wallet, and told police that she looked so peaceful at the side of the road. And although he hoped that she wasn't dead, he knew that she was. When pressed for more information about the location he left her body, Stephen claimed he could not remember. Police would canvass the densely wooded areas along Bridge Road, just west of Interstate 95, trying to find Trisha's body. They would request the assistance of the non-profit Peace River Search and Rescue, who brought along their own cadaver dogs. The search, however, was unfruitful. They couldn't find Trisha's body anywhere. Police then went back and spoke with Stephen further. There were some inconsistencies within his story. First of all, her body wasn't where he claimed it was. Stephen would provide some more information. While he still contended that he had accidentally killed Trisha, he admitted that he had dismembered her body and then buried her. He hadn't left her at the side of the road at all. Police said that while no body had been found, they were redoubling their efforts to try and find Trisha. They were canvassing a 15-mile area near Jonathan Dixon State Park in Martin County. When Stephen confessed to the murder of Trisha, he admitted that he had buried her in a wooded area in Hope Sound, but he would not disclose the exact location. Police requested the assistance, from other law enforcement agencies to search for Trisha's remains. The state attorney's office announced that while there were no plans to offer Stephen a plea deal in exchange for the whereabouts of Trisha's body, they also had no plans to take it off the table. Assistant State Attorney David Lusgarten said that they would need to speak with Trisha's family first before deciding on that matter. However, shortly thereafter, Stephen was charged with second-degree murder and child neglect. The child neglect charge was because Stephen admitted to leaving Faith home alone while he disposed of Trisha's body. He was ordered to be held at the Martin County Jail without bail. While he had initially denied to reveal the location of Trisha's body, he finally conceded and led police directly to Trisha's body. He took police out to a remote area of Hope Sounds Hungryland Wildlife and Environmental Area, and he pointed out where he had buried her.
Yeah, are you good? Okay. Okay. And there's no way it could be any back further, or you're certain this is it here?
This would be it.
Okay.
Trisha's body would finally be unearthed, but only part of it. Some of her remains were found inside a plastic box that was filled with corrosive liquid. The only things that were discernible was a pelvis and an upper part of a thigh. Much like Stephen had already confessed, Trisha was dismembered. Her body had been buried outside of the 15-mile radius the police had been searching. The sheriff would hold a press conference.
The scene seems to have been pretty extensive, and it would appear to us that Williams was out here for some time. And because the dogs are clearly alerting to the fact that there was human remains or possibly blood, and nothing here is leading us to believe that she was in fact killed here. So it's entirely possible that part of his story is true, that the death occurs at his temporary place where he was staying. There was either an absence of blood or he did an incredibly good job cleaning it up. I still think the likelihood is, and my detectives think, that the homicide occurs at their house, that there's no evidence. So it could have been any number of things. It could have been closed head trauma. It could have been strangulation. And then the body is brought out here and the rest occurs out here. Yeah, the question is, do we have any additional information on how the dismemberment would have occurred? I think it's pretty clear it was probably a chainsaw.
Stephen's cooperation had come as part of a plea agreement in which he revealed where Trisha was buried in exchange of a plea to no contest to second-degree murder and a 35-year sentence in prison. It was decided that a plea agreement would be offered due to the fact that finding Trisha's body in such an extensive area was like finding a needle in a haystack. As a matter of fact, it was Stephen who had recommended the plea deal. Did you know that the most common cause of grinding and clenching your teeth is stress? We all have stress in our lives, whether it be financial, personal, or something else. For me personally, I know I stress about deadlines. Once you grind your enamel, you don't get it back, and those with worn, chipped, and cracked enamel have much more sensitive teeth. There can be cosmetic fixes such as implants, veneers, and teeth crowns, but they're super expensive. That's where Smile Brilliant Snite Guards come in. If you get them from the dentist, it can cost up to $600. But at Smile Brilliant, you can get them as low as $45 per night guard. Just head to smilebrilliant.com/morbidology to get a 20% discount for your night guard. Smile Brilliant do so much more as well, such as custom fitted teeth whitening trays, whitening gel, electric toothbrushes, water flossers, and more. Take better care of your teeth today at smilebrilliant.com/morbidology and get 20% off. While announcing the new development, Sheriff Snyder said, "In a perfect world, this wouldn't have happened. I think we've done the very best we can." He said that Trisha's family approved of the plea agreement, and they themselves would release their own statement, which read, "We are grateful to know that we are now able to lay Trisha to rest with the grace and dignity that she deserves. Although this is not the outcome we wanted, we are incredibly grateful that Trisha is now home." With Trisha's body recovered, it was now time for Stephen to be formally sentenced. It was scheduled for the 24th of June. Since Stephen was an airman with the Air Force, he would also be facing a military hearing. Before that hearing came around, however, prosecutor Thomas Bachdahl announced that despite the plea agreement, he was going to argue for a stricter sentence for Stephen. He revealed that Tricia had been dismembered with a chainsaw at the location where her remains were found, and that it was his belief that the dismemberment invalidated the plea deal. He stated, "I will put this man on a slow bus to death row, because in the end, this is a premeditated murder." He said that Stephen's claims that the murder were accidental were nothing more than lies and manipulation. He said, "It's an unfortunate reality of this business that on occasion, you must make a deal with the devil. I made a deal with the devil." In a true testament to the family's faith, just days after the gruesome discovery, Trisha's father, David Todd, said that he had forgiven Stephen. After some of Trisha's remains were unearthed, her family went to the site. They placed a pole in the ground at the exact location where she was buried. As David said, "We put a pole in the ground which I want to replace with the tree if they'll let me, which is where she was actually buried for a month. Alongside the pole marking the spot where Tricia was found, the family placed a wooden cross, flower pots, and a bright blue bench." He said that his daughter was in heaven, and was already in heaven by the time that she was dismembered by Stephen. He stated, "But that's not the way civilized people treat their dead, to chop them up with a chainsaw and put them in a bucket of acid." He said that his strong faith in God was helping him get through the devastating loss of his daughter. In regards to Stephen, he said that he forgave him. He said, "You may have little tiny things, but those little tiny things can grow and make you into a monster like Stephen if you don't forgive. And I just want to tell the people who are listening to let go and forgive whatever grudges you have. Give it to God and start saying the words." He said that if he could say one thing to Stephen, he would tell him that the family forgave him, that Tricia was in a better place, and that God loved him. He revealed that when Stephen and Tricia were married, Stephen was a God-fearing man, but said that he appeared to have lost his way. Since only a portion of Tricia's remains were discovered where Stephen had led them to, the search for the rest of her remains and other items would continue in the beginning of June. They had been using sonar to assist in the search, and it would identify an area of interest in a canal near where some of Tricia's remains were buried. They speculated that the area of interest could turn up the chainsaw that was used to dismember Tricia. They would trawl through the canal and recover 9 human teeth, 2 battery-powered saws, and 1 pair of pliers. This new evidence indicated that before disposing of Tricia's body, Stephen had pulled out all of her teeth with pliers. A couple of days later, Trisha's loved ones gathered for a memorial at the Christ Fellowship Church in Sturt. Her younger brother Nathan stood before the crowd to reminisce about some of the happier times in her life. He said that he would remember her as his loving and sassy big sister who always took care of him. He recollected how she became the cool big sister who would pick him up from kindergarten and take him for ice cream. Nathan went on to speak about Stephen, telling the crowd that he had forgiven the man who took his sister from him. He said that he held no bitterness or anger towards him, and asked that everybody instead pray for Stephen. Around 800 people gathered for the memorial, where Tricia was remembered as fierce, nice, happy, loving, and kind. Those who knew Tricia spoke of her constant smile and laughter.
"Tricia, we have lost so much beauty. She will forever be known as a caring friend, a loyal sister, passionate mother, and beloved daughter." And oh my goodness, Tricia's laugh. It was a beautiful sound. And anyone who heard it knew she was full of joy.
Tricia would be buried in the South Florida National Cemetery in Lake Worth, which is a military cemetery. While Stephen was behind bars awaiting his sentencing phase, he was caught attempting to pull out nylon cords from a mattress. He was being held in the suicide watch section of the jail. The sheriff's office said that they weren't sure why Stephen was trying to pull strings out of the mattress, but one can only assume he was considering attempting suicide. The sentencing phase had been scheduled for June, but it needed to be pushed back to give the state more time to prepare. They were wanting to determine whether Stephen had complied with the conditions of his plea agreement. Since only partial remains had been discovered, the state believed that Stephen had failed to lead police to all of Trisha's remains, making his plea agreement ineffective. Stephen's defence team suggested that he had led them to all of Trisha's remains, but since her dismembered body had been found in hydrochloric acid, some of them had been completely dissolved. In September, the sentencing phase was held. Stephen's team had first of all requested a mental health evaluation to determine whether Stephen was competent. Doctors would determine that he was. Victim impact statements were presented by Trisha's loved ones. Her father, David, said that each night he prayed for Stephen and said that he had failed him as a father-in-law. He said that he never believed in a million years that Stephen was capable of committing such violence. He believed that Stephen was the perfect gentleman. That was the image that Stephen publicly portrayed to everybody. Trisha's brother Kendall said during his victim impact statements that he too forgave Stephen and that he hoped that he could find God and become a better person. Addressing Stephen, he said, "There's a lot of hurting people where you're going. We hope that you can be a light." Stephen was given the opportunity to speak, but he declined. His father, Jack Williams, asked if he could speak on behalf of his son, but the defense said that they were not calling any witnesses. Jack later said that he had just wanted to say that he appreciated the prayers Trisha's family had bestowed on his son, adding that he too was praying for his son each and every night. Martin County Circuit Judge Lawrence Meerman would hand Stephen Williams a sentence of 35 years, like had been arranged with the plea agreement, with 130 days credited for time served. There had been much debate as to whether Stephen had led police to all of Trisha's remains, but a forensic lab concluded that the plastic box had contained all of Trisha's remains. The majority had just been completely dissolved. In handing down the sentence, Judge Meerman acknowledged that the sentence was clearly less than full justice, but said that without the plea, they most likely would never have found Trisha's remains. Outside of court, David spoke with the media. He told them that he hoped that Stephen would take advantage of the education opportunities he was going to be presented with in prison, before adding he hoped that he doesn't get out of prison and kill somebody else. While the discovery certainly had brought Trisha's family some kind of closure, the plea left a looming question as to why. That question would finally be answered after Stephen was sentenced. He sat down with police and provided some more information about the murder of his ex-wife. He said that when he drove to Florida, he had already planned on how he was going to murder Trisha. He had spent the entire day with Trisha before killing her. However, he said that when she was at his rental home, he couldn't get the nerve to kill her. After she left, he changed his mind and he decided that it was now or never. He sent Trisha the text message asking her to come back to the rental because Faith was feeling unwell. Trisha knocked on the door and as soon as she entered the home, Stephen said that he placed his hands around her neck and strangled her until she fell unconscious. Stephen didn't kill her just yet though. While Trisha was unconscious, he zip-tied her hands and feet. He had planned on making it look like Trisha had left for a mission trip, like she had done in the past, and then just never returned. When Trisha regained consciousness, he had planned on getting her credit card number and her password to her email so that he could pretend to be her and tell her loved ones that she was leaving on a mission trip. However, when Trisha regained consciousness, things didn't go to plan. Stephen explained that Trisha just began screaming. As Faith slept in the bedroom next door, Stephen beat Trisha over the head with a club. He then choked her until she stopped breathing. Stephen detailed how he then stuffed Trisha's body into her own car. As he began to drive in the direction of Hungryland Wildlife and Environmental Area, he realized that gas was low in the car. He was apprehensive about stopping for gas with Trisha's body in the car, so he drove back home, got into his car, and went out to get gas with a gas can. He then drove back home, filled up Trisha's car with the gas, and then drove out to the Hungryland Wildlife and Environmental Area. That morning, Before carrying out the murder, Stephen had already dug a grave for Tricia and had left a plastic tub that was filled with acid on the ground in preparation. Here, he dismembered Trisha's body with the saws he had purchased on Amazon, placed the dismembered remains into the plastic tub filled with acid, and then buried it. As for motivation, Stephen told police that he felt as though Tricia had always disrespected him when he tried to video chat with their daughter. He additionally said that he was angry about the amount of child support he was required to pay each month, and that Tricia was wanting to get full custody of Faith. Disturbingly, Stephen was quite jovial throughout the interview. He laughed and smiled as he told police that he almost got away with it, before revealing he had told inmates he confessed because he was tired of lying. In the aftermath of Trisha's murder, Faith was adopted by her brother, Jonathan, and she is being raised alongside her two cousins. He said to Fox 29 News that Faith reminds him so much of his older sister. Her laugh is identical to her mother's laugh. He said that Faith has a wild personality which mimics the personality that his sister had, telling the newspaper that the smiles and memories help him to focus on the good things, as opposed to how Tricia was brutally taken from them. The plea deal that Stephen Williams secured is often referred to as the deal with the devil. It's hard to imagine a case more horrific than the murder of Tricia Todd. Stephen took advantage of the love that Tricia had for her daughter, luring her to his rented home and then brutally murdering her while her daughter slept peacefully next door. 35 years for such a heinous crime is a slap in the face of justice, but there is still a glimmer of hope that true justice will be served. When Stephen serves his 35 years, there is a chance that the Air Force will convict him for the murder as well, since he was an employee at the time of the murder. This means that Stephen can be charged in a military court, and if convicted, he could be facing the death penalty. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, Rebecca and Allison. If you want bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus, feel free to search for Morbidology on Patreon. I also offer ad-free and early release episodes, merch, behind the scenes, which includes bonus audio, case files and videos, and of course my undying love. This weekend, it's CrimeCon in London and I'm going to be there all weekend on Podcast Row. I have a 10% discount for my listeners if you just head to crimecon.co.uk and enter the promo code MORBID. You get 10% off your ticket. I hope to see some of you there, and please do feel free to come up and say hi. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.